everyone. And as always, I'd like to welcome everyone to our Sunday Shir. Today's Shir is actually a little bit of a special occasion for me personally. I think the Shir, it was 4 years ago, Parashas Vayetze, that this Shir began. It was on December 7th of 2008. That the Shir began. So I know the flyers have said that we're now in the fifth year, but now we're officially in the fifth year, because this is when we started. It happens to be that day was a challenging day. Those who recall, the Shir began shortly after the Levaya of Dr. Abe Shane, Avram Zev Ben Yaakov from Rebbe, was a personal friend and a great friend of the yeshiva. And I would like to dedicate today's Shir in his memory, Avram Zev Ben Yaakov. I would also like to, before I begin, acknowledge the fact that quite a few of the sources for today's Shir came from the RJJ Journal of Halacha, and I'm very indebted to them, very grateful for providing a lot of information on this topic. Okay, so Parashas Vayetze obviously is the Parasha of weddings. We have in the Parasha the wedding, the famous or perhaps infamous wedding that took place between Yaakov and Leah, and in turn the resulting chasana that took place between Yaakov and Rachel. And therefore I figured that it would be a good time to speak about a topic pertaining to weddings, pertains actually to a lot of other areas of halacha as well, but something which is a source of controversy, confusion, debate, a lot of other things in our time, and that is the practice of how men and women are seated at weddings. We know that if you go to a chasana, go to a wedding today, you see every situation. Oftentimes you see men and women sitting together. Oftentimes you see men and women sitting, the other extreme, sitting separately with a machitza in between them. And sometimes you see men and women sitting separately without a machitza. And the question always comes up, if you go to such a chasana, it could be that today already sort of been an acceptance by all sides, you know, to these disputes that, well, this is just the way it is, and this one does this one does that way. But the topic of today's Shir is I'd like to explore this inyan, as the title that was sent out presented it. Is this a halacha? Is it a chumrah? Or is it a mishigat? And I would like to go through all the possibilities. I am not necessarily committed to coming out. You'll see, it's not going to be clear at the end. It's not going to be 100% clear, what the bottom line is. But I feel that it's important for people to be aware of what the issues are, so that especially when it comes to weddings, when there are the difference between a wedding and every pretty much any other simcha is that at a wedding there are two participants. There's the chasan side and the kalah side, and therefore it's very, very common that you have different opinions and different attitudes towards this very issue, and it could be a source of strife, a source of machlokas. So I think it's just important to go through the inyan and to try to see what is indeed involved in this. The idea of separating men and women is most known in shul. Right? This is one of the very big issues in the 20th century. The Orthodox movement in the 20th century, vis-a-vis the conservative and certainly the reform movement, and one of the central issues probably that defined an Orthodox shul as opposed to any other type was the fact that an Orthodox shul had a machitza. And today the issue has pretty much died down, but those who can recall back to the 1940s and 50s and 60s, and particularly those who were in the rabbanit, those who served in the rabbinate at that time, it was a very, very difficult issue to deal with, because of the fact that the movement in America was that there should not be machitzas in shul. It started with the conservative movement pretty much abandoning machitzas at the very end of the 1800s and carrying it to the 1900s. and it became a very big sore point. And one of the key aspects to the sore point was, where does it say that you have to have an mechitza? If a person looks in Shulchan Aruch, you will not find, go cover to cover, you will not see anywhere that it says that a shul even needs to have a mechitza separating the men and the women. There is no pasuk in the Torah that says this. What is this based on? So, as is, I think, fairly well known, the source of the mechitza in the shul in general is based on a Mishnah, a Gemara that's found in the Sefer Sukkah. The Mishnah tells us, we have it here on the sheet, on Daf Nun Aleph, in the Sefer Sukkah. The Mishnah describes the great celebration that took place in the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, that they had the Simchas Beis HaShaleva. There was a tremendous celebration. We know that we have a halachah Moshe Mitzinai, that when on Sukkot, when the karbanos were brought, when the Karban Tamid was brought, so accompanying the Karban Tamid throughout the year was the pouring of wine on the Mizbeach. But on Sukkot, there was the pouring of water, as Nisuch HaMayim, also something which is not mentioned in the Torah explicitly, is Halacha Moshe Mitzinai. And because of that, it became a very big dispute between the Sukkim, those who did not accept the oral tradition, those who didn't accept the Torah Shebaal Peh, and those who were loyal to the Mesorah. And as such, in order to accentuate the fact that we held that it was the right thing to do to pour the water on the Mizbeach, so therefore, after all, water is closely identified with Sukkot. Pachad Nidon Mahamayim, and Sukkot is the time that the judgment of water, which broadly means the judgment of Parnasa, is made. And that's why we have the Arba Minim, the four species, which are the wolf and Esrog, etc., which are all things that need a great deal of water in order to grow. And the symbolism in that is the fact that it should be a Hashpa, that Hashem should bestow water upon us. We're using something that needs a lot of water for a mitzvah. So in order to establish firmly this tradition, the Chazal ordained that there should be a great, great celebration with the drawing of the water. They wanted to make it perfectly clear that there is, in addition to the Torah that we have that's written, there is tradition, there is Mesorah, there's Torah Shebaal Peh, and that's just as much a part of Yiddishkeit as the Torah Shebaal. And therefore, they ordained that there should be a great celebration attached to the drawing of the water, Simchas Beis HaShaleva. And the Mishnah tells us, and Warren Sukkah elaborates, that the rabbis would come and perform all kinds of stunts with juggling and juggling fires and a lot of things that we cannot even replicate today. And this was all done in the name of establishing the Nisuch HaMayim practice. So the Mishnah here in Masechet Sukkah tells us, Mishalo Roa Simchas Beis HaShaleva, a person, anyone who did not see, who did not witness the Simchas Beis HaShaleva, the Simcha that was involved in the drawing of the water to be poured on the Mizbeach, so Lo Roa Simcha Miyama, that person never saw a Simcha in his lifetime. Meaning that this was the most spectacular thing anyone has ever seen. If you think you've seen a Simcha, but you haven't seen the Simcha Space of Shaleva, it's as if you never saw anything. Because it was so incredible that it exceeded any other celebration that took place. And the Mishnah elaborates, the Motzei Yom Tov Harishon Shel Chag, at the end of the first day of Yom Tov, which obviously in Eretz Yisrael, it was only one day of Yom Tov. So at the end of the Motzei, the first day of Yom Tov, of Sukkot, now it's already Chol HaMoed. So it says, Yardu Ezras Noshim. So the celebration took place on the grounds of the Beit HaMikdash itself. And where did it take place? It took place in an area of the Beit HaMikdash called the Ezras Noshim. The Ezras Noshim was a loose term used for an area in the Beit HaMikdash domain that women would go into. It was not primarily frequented by women, but because of the fact that, generally speaking, they were in the Beit HaMikdash, there were different areas that different people could go in. There were restricted areas. There were areas that typically only Kohanim went to. There were areas that only men went to, generally speaking. And we'll see maybe that wasn't always the case. And there was an area that was open to others as well. It was open to men and to women. So that area was called the Ezras Noshim. So it says a very large area. The Mishnah Maseches Midos tells us it was a very, very large area. And because it was probably the largest open space in the Beit HaMikdash property, so therefore that was designated to be the place where they're going to have the celebration. So the Mishnah tells us, U'misachin sham tikkun gadol. That at that time they made a tikkun gadol, which means that literally translated, they made a renovation. They made an addition, a tikkun. They added on to the building of the Beit HaMikdash, a tikkun gadol. The Mishnah says a tikkun gadol, a great addition was put into the Beit HaMikdash at that time. What is the tikkun gadol? So if you go down to the second source there, the Gemara on the next page asks, my tikkun gadol, what is this a reference to? So the Gemara says, Rabbi Elazar calls the Shoshaninu Chalaka Isa Barishana, that originally the Beit HaMikdash was smooth, the Beit HaMikdash was a one-story building. But nevertheless, v'hikifua gezustra, they surrounded it. They surrounded it with room to make like a balcony. V'hiskinu sheyehu nashim yoshvos mumalav anashim mumata. And they instituted that for that celebration, the women should sit above in the balcony, and the men should be below. The men who were dancing, not everybody was participating in the dancing. It's unclear from the Gemara who was participating. Was it restricted? Was it open to anybody? But the dancing of the men took place below, and the spectators amongst the men also stayed below. The women sat in the balcony. And the Gemara proceeds to say, Tanu Rabbanan, v'rishona hayu nashim mivafnim v'anashim mivachot. That initially, before they came up with this idea of making the balcony, the way they had it set up was that everybody came on the same level. Everybody came to the Beit HaMikdash, and you had the women sat, the women were on the inside, and the men were behind them. The women had the closer view of what was going on. The men stood behind them to watch the celebration. So the Brisa tells us, V'hayu bo'alei day kalas rosh, that it led to a certain degree of lightheadedness because you had the intermingling of men and women. So it says, "Eskinu shehu nashim yoshvos mibachutz v'nashim mibefnim." So the first plan was, how are you going to address this problem? The first suggestion was, let's reverse it. Let's put the men on the inside and the women behind them. Presumably, that would solve the problem. The women would not be in the direct view of the men. They would be behind them. That was the first attempt. So the Gemara tells us, but that didn't help. Badayin hayubonli dekalus rosh. So it still didn't help. Okay, you have to keep in mind the context. You're standing on the grounds of the Beit HaMikdash. Right? We're not talking about you hanging out somewhere in a restaurant or in a nightclub. You're talking about this is on the grounds of the Beit HaMikdash. Okay, so it says, Hiskinu sheyu nashim yoshus numalav anashim umata. So therefore, the ultimate solution they came up with was that we'll have to make a balcony, and we're going to add on to the structure of the Beit HaMikdash in that area, a balcony, and the women will go up into the balcony to watch, and the men will be below. And that's what the Mishnah is referring to with the tikkun gadol. Okay. So now we come to a very, very crucial part of the Gemara. So the Gemara asks the following question. The Gemara asks, "Heki Ovid Hachi." The Gemara says, "How were they allowed to do this?" V'haksiv, there's a pasuk in the Navi that says, "Hakol b'ksav miyad Hashem, olai yiskil," which means that the Navi says that all of the blueprint for the Beit HaMikdash, the layout, when the Beit HaMikdash was built, that they call interior decorators, the Torah. Now, obviously, we know from the Torah there had to be certain kelim in the Beit HaMikdash. You had to have a mizbeach in the outside, and you had to have a mizbeach, a small mizbeach on the inside. You had to have menorah, shulchan. But in terms of the layout itself, in terms of the nitty gritty layout, who designed that? Did they just call in some architect and say, you know, what motifs do you want to give to the Beit HaMikdash? So the Gemara says that was hardly the case. Hakol b'ksav miyad Hashem, that everything was coming b'nevuah, that the Chazal say that David HaMelech, before his passing, he instructed his son Shlomo that he had received a prophecy from Natan HaNavi, God HaChozeh, that they had instructed him with the specific way that the Beit HaMikdash was to be built, and there was no room for any deviation. It had to be built exactly a certain way, with all the specifics. Every little detail was spelled out. So the Gemara asked, well, if that's the case, then how could they add a balcony? Granted, there might have been a need for it, Yeah, okay, there was a problem. They had the Simchas Beis Shoev. The Simchas Beis Shoev itself was a development that took place after the building of the Beis HaMikdash, right? That was not in Shlomo's time that they had such a thing. But nevertheless, and the need arose, but that doesn't give you a license to do what you want. The Beis HaMikdash had to be built a certain way. Says the Gemara, Amarav, Kro Ashkechu V'Zorosh. So the Gemara says that the answer is that they found the pasuk and they made a drasha based on this pasuk. Okay, this pasuk is found in the book of Zechariah, which is one of the Treyasar, one of the 12, so to speak, minor prophets, meaning not that the Navi was minor, but that the prophecies, the Nevuos, were small in size and therefore they were put into one sefer. So it says the following. Now here, the Navi is prophesizing to the Messianic era, to the Emosa Mashiach. And there's a tradition that there was going to be a Mashiach ben Yosef and a Mashiach ben David. That the first there would be a Mashiach number one, the first stage of the redemption that would be led by Mashiach ben Yosef. And then that person was going to die, and subsequently the ultimate, the Mashiach ben David, would arrive. And it's brought down, just for the record, it's brought down in the name of the Kabbalah, it's brought down in the name of the Zohar, that the Zohar says that subsequently this vision of the Emosa Mashiach would change, and not necessarily the way it's going to play out. So it's brought down in the name of the Zohar. But whatever the case may be, the Navi here is talking about the death of the Mashiach ben Yosef. And it says the following. It says the Softa Ha'aret, that there will be a eulogy at this time. Mishpachos Levad, families will be separate. Mishpachos Beis David Levad, Unishehem Levad. That the family of the Beis David, the royal family, is going to be seated separately. Unishehem Levad, and their wives, the women, are going to be seated separately. So it says in the Pasuk. So says the Gemara, Amru. So the rabbi said, Balot Barim Kal V'chomer, the rabbi said, look at this. Umala Asad Lovo, Sha'oskin Behesbid, the Ein Yetzahara Sholet Bahem. We're talking here about the Messianic era when there's going to be a diminished Yetzahara. And these people are going to be involved in eulogizing someone. This is not a happy, frivolous occasion. This is a very sad occasion. And nevertheless, the pasuk prescribes that it has to be anoshim levad v'noshim levad. It has to be men separately and women separately. So achshav shalasukim b'simcha. So now at the simchas beis shaleva, that people are rejoicing. The Eitzahara shoet b'hem, and the Eitzahara is out there in full glory because of the fact that this great celebration is a time of levity. So alachas kama v'kama. So all the more so that the men and the women should be kept separately. This was the drasha that the Chazal made from this pasuk that said that when it comes to the Simchas Beis Shoeva, they said, look, if the Navi is telling us that at a time of sadness there should still be a separation, there should still be the men separately and the women separately, so too, all the more so at a time of celebration. This is the Gemara that's found in Maseches Sukkah. So Rav Moshe Feinstein, in one of his tshuvas, asked the question on this Gemara. He says, that's very nice, but how did the Gemara answer the question? The question was that it says in the pasuk, HaKol B'Ksav, Miyad Hashem, that the details of the Beis HaMikdash all were given over directly to Nevuah. It was all, so to speak, in writing. Hashem gave the blueprints of the Beis HaMikdash. And as such, you can't add to that. So if you can't add to that, so then good, they had a good reason to do it. So what? But you can't add that it seems like it's there as a custom. You can't add to the way the Beis HaMikdash was built. How did that give anyone the right to come and make renovations? So he says, the Rav Moshe says, that obviously you have to say that the issue involved is a Torah issue. In other words, you're dealing here, the pasuk that says that the Beis HaMikdash had to be built a certain way, let's say, is the status of a Doraisa because of the fact that it was a direct Nevuah from Hashem given over to Nevi'im in turn to David HaMelech in turn to Shlomo. But it must be that the need to separate men and women is also Mizaraisa. And it's also Minatora. In other words, the pasuk here is telling us that the reason why they're allowed to do it is because the whole prohibition is because the Torah doesn't say to do this. But if something arises which creates a violation of a different Torah law, so then it stands to reason that the same Torah that says that you have to build the Beis HaMikdash a certain way would say you have to make this addition as well. And especially they're deriving here from the use of a Kal V'Chomer, which is one we know, one of the Yud Gimel Midrash HaTorah Nidreshet Behem, that this is one of the ways of interpreting the Torah Shebichtav. And therefore, says Ramosha, it must be that they're dealing here, the issue of mixing men and women would present a problem in the Oraisa. It would present a problem that is it's not just stama problem, like you say, oh, it's not the best thing. But this is a problem that would be on a Torah level. This would be a Torah issue, and as such, that would be the only thing that would give any sort of license to make any adjustment to the way the Beis HaMikdash was constructed. And therefore, he says, in other words, you see from here that the issue involved is Zoraisa, and as such, the Torah demands a solution. If you're violating the Torah law, the Torah itself begs for a solution. You got to come to the way it stops it. And that, and only that, would allow the plans of the Beis HaMikdash to be adjusted. So based on this, this is a landmark tshuva that became very, very world famous tshuva that Ramosha Feinstein wrote in the year dated 1946, that he wrote it at a time that the conservative movement was dominant in this country, and mechitzas not only were they constructing synagogues without mechitzas, but even a lot of shuls that had previously had mechitzas were tearing them down because they were saying exactly this point. They were saying, well, where does it say? It was just some old minig. It's just okay. So nobody disputed that all the previous shuls, both in Europe and in the Eastern countries, all had mechitzas or all had balconies. Nobody disputed that. But the question was raised, but where does it say? It doesn't say anywhere. So it's a tradition. So it's a backward tradition. In the name of progress, let's tear down the mechitzas. And this became a rampant issue in this country, which the Chassidei Hashem will do to the Mesiris Nefesh of many, many people. The issue has pretty much passed us by. We're past that. But nonetheless, in its day, this was a very big issue, and he wrote this tshuva very strongly worded, and several subsequent ones that are printed in the first volume of the Igros Moshe Arachaim, where he discusses at length the need for a mechitza. Now, what exactly would be the point? What would be needed in just to understand the idea of mechitza in general? So, what? In other words, now we have to bear in mind at the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, no tefillahs were being said. This was not a case of davening. Okay, it wasn't davening, it was a celebration. It was a celebration. So you will ask, so then how do we come to say that therefore a shul has to have a mechitza just because, okay, at that, you can make the argument, and people did make this argument, that it's different because there everybody's celebrating. So we all know that when everybody's in the party mood, so problems are more likely to happen. However, a shul is a solemn place, and it's a place of prayer, and therefore maybe you can make the case that you don't need, in such a situation, a mechitza. So he addressed these points as well, and he said that the fact of the matter is that the reason why it was needed in the Beis HaMikdash was because of the fact that there is a mitzvah in the Torah that says Mikdash Aitiro. Mikdash Aitiro means you have to have reverence for the Mikdash. You have to have reverence for the Beis HaMikdash. And reverence means, the Gemara says, that what that means is that a person cannot conduct himself with kalas rosh. A person cannot conduct themselves on the grounds of the Beis HaMikdash in a lightheaded manner. It's a serious place, a solemn place, a place of great reverence, and a person has to act accordingly. And therefore, the need to have a mechitza to separate the men and the women would be because of the fact that would there not be such a thing, as the Gemara says, there was kalas rosh, that's explicit in the Gemara. And that is absolutely prohibited because of the part of Mikdash Etiro. So Rav Moshe says that same issur applies in a shul. That same issur applies in a shul. A shul, we have the pasuk there, Hilah Mikdash Ma'ad, a shul is considered a minor Beit HaMikdash. And as such, we know that it's brought in Shulchan Aruch and Simin Kuf Nun Aleph and Arachayim. It's brought that the Knesset Ein Nogin Ben Kalos Rosh. Person is not allowed to have lightheadedness in the shul, and which we discussed once in terms of what is allowed to be done in the shul and what's not. And even were one to say the Heter, which we once discussed several years ago, that well, today the shuls in Chutz La'aretz are built, the Tanai, that they're built on the condition that they could be used for other things as well. But nevertheless, as we mentioned at time, Kalos Rosh is usher according to all opinions in the Rishonim. In other words, to do something of lightheadedness, even a Tanai doesn't help for. So therefore, a shul requires essentially the same prohibition as the Beis HaMikdash had, and therefore, as such, if the Beis HaMikdash needed a mechitza in order to prevent Kalos Rosh, to prevent lightheadedness, so too a shul. And this became this is the tradition going back as far as anybody knows, all the way back. There is no Misora to the contrary. Shuls always had something like this. But when it was questioned, when the challenge was put forth, where do you know this from? So this is the primary, so not the only source, but this is the primary source for mechitza, and thus we have the clear line drawn that a shul must have a mechitza. Now, it remains to be, what's unclear from this is, which also became a raging argument to this day, is the question that granted you need a mechitza and a shul, granted you need to separate the men and the women, but what is the purpose of that separation? Is the purpose of that separation to prevent physical mingling, what's called hizarvos, that people should not mix together physically? Or is the purpose to prevent histaklos? Is the purpose to prevent that they should not see each other, that the men specifically, that the men should not see the women? And obviously, the difference between these two opinions is going to be considerable. Because if you're going to say that the purpose is just to prevent intermingling, a mechitza won't need to be as high as if it needed to prevent the view. If it's a question of people should not gaze at each other, then you need a higher mechitza, and you need a mechitza that can't be seen through, or at least from the men's side to the women's side. It was not a concern that the women should see the men, but that the men should see the women was a concern, right? That was the concern. So this is a raging, raging argument to this day. And it happens to be that Rav Moshe Feinstein was lenient in this, what we would consider a lenient opinion, that he said that the primary issue was the intermingling. The primary issue of intermingling meant that it would still be possible for there. You didn't have to put up necessarily the Great Wall of China. It didn't have to be that way. He himself said that it wouldn't be a bad thing. He recommended that if it was at all possible, for obvious practical reasons, it would be wise to prevent the ability to see. But he said, Mitzad Hadin, from the standpoint of Halacha, the main concern was intermingling. Now you will say, if that's the case, so then why must the mechitza be as high as it is in all the shuls? Anything would be enough. So he brought proof from Gemara, so one could look at the truth. It's not really the topic of the shir. This is just background. That he brought proofs from Gemara that there is a certain height that's needed. He cites Gemara all over the shas that show that if you're trying to prevent people from mingling, you would need a wall a certain height. It's not just enough to put a little partition as a reminder. It's not just enough to, you know, put up a, you know, some low wall, but rather you needed a wall which the exact shear of it actually grew with inflation over the years. But the originally he said 18 tefachim. 18 tefach, of course, with a tefach. There are different opinions how much a tefach is. But this is what he said, that the purpose would be that there should not be the intermingling. Many, many other rabbanim from that time and going forward strongly contested that point and said that they don't agree, that the issue is to prevent histaklos, in which case you would require a much more elaborate mechitza. It would have to block people from actually being able to see the women. And this really remains an issue to this day. In the different shuls, you'll see different mechitzas and different types, and very often, if you get to the bottom, obviously it's a sensitive point It always has been. So if you get to the bottom of it, you'll see that this one is relying on this opinion and this one is relying on that opinion. The truth of the matter is, if one looks in the Rambam, in the Hilchos Beis HaMikdash, the Rambam implies that the purpose of the Mechitza in the Simchus Beis HaShaleva was to prevent people from mixing, physical mixing. But in the Pirush HaMishnayos LaRambam to Masechta Sukkah, he says that the purpose was that they shouldn't see each other, which is apparently a steer in the Rambam, a contradiction. The Rambam himself says two different things. So one can look in the Igros Moshe, you'll see that he tries to reconcile this question. Yeah.
When they made that secret, they didn't have a Mechitza. They built a balcony.
Right. Okay. So now.
They built a balcony.
Fine. So now I'm going to get that right.
I heard it's better.
Yeah. Right. So now, that's an excellent point. So, which is also a point of contention, that how should this Mechitza be constructed? If you follow the model of the Beis HaMikdash, so in the Beis HaMikdash, they had a balcony. Okay, now it's very common today in almost every shul that you don't have it quite that way. Right? Here in town, we don't have two-story buildings altogether, generally speaking. So therefore, all the shuls just have on the same level. Okay, all right. So now clearly the old tradition was to have a balcony. Okay, and this was because that's what they did by the Simchus Beis HaShoeva. And you'll say, well, that's the way it was. Can you have it on the same level? This is also a point now. If you have it on a balcony, as was pointed out, if you have it on a balcony, you don't necessarily. Rav Moshe Feinstein makes this point very strongly that in the Beis HaMikdash, if a man was standing in the center of the action and he looked up, he would see the women, because it doesn't say that they made a balcony with a curtain around it. They just made a balcony. So again, this is a hotly contested point. Yes, sir.
What's the major synagogues in Israel?
Yes. Balcony. Yeah, but that's the Masorah. That's the way shuls were. It's a more modern development that you have side by side. It could be, I don't know this for sure, but it could be that it was an American type of development because of the strength of the influence of the conservative movement, that shuls were tearing down mechitzas. So then, when the tide began to turn, when people began to put mechitzas back into shuls, it may have been too much to tell the women to go sit upstairs. So they just put a mechitza downstairs. This is a very, very contested point. There are people that will tell you that you should only have a balcony. There are people that will tell you that if you have a balcony, you don't need a curtain. There are people that will tell you if you have a balcony, you still need a curtain. There's all kinds of opinions. And the fact of the matter is that today, in shuls, for other reasons also, it's impractical only to have a balcony. You have women who come to shul. I mean, I imagine in all times it was like this, but particularly in our times, it's common that women come to shul and they have erevin. People come in wheelchairs, so they can't go up the steps. It's not possible. How do you expect them to get up to the balcony? So people just due to a handicap cannot make it up the steps. So therefore, it's very, very common that it's put in shul side by side with the men, and that's the way we have it. But all of these points are points that have been debated. If you want to get into a good argument with somebody, you don't have to talk politics over the cholent. You can discuss the mechitza in the shul, and you'll get into a good argument, and it'll probably end up in more than just a little argument. Yes.
This very gemara that you're citing, you have both factors.
Yes.
On the one hand, it's college boys who could apply their action. But within the Kabbalah, it says the Yitzhahara Shvelet.
Yeah.
That might be the basis for preventing the hypocrisy.
Yeah, okay, that's true. That's the question. Yes. The Yitzhahara being Sholeh. The Yitzhahara, what is it going to take? To stop the Eitz Hara from being sholeh. What does it take from the Eitz Hara? So you'll say, well, if it's just so again, you could make the argument. In other words, what is the Kalas Rosh that they were worried about? Were they worried that there was actually stuff going on, that there was flirting, so to speak, going on, or that, or is it just that if you have people mingling, so eventually it's going to come to that? So that's really part of the question. In other words, if you worry that a person is really going to be in the wrong place, so then you have to have a real black hole view. On the other hand, if it's just a question of worrying that it could lead to something, So then you could take a little more lenient position. This is the issue. One could look there in the Igros Moshes in the Lamed Tes in the first volume of Arachayim. He puts out the whole Shita and in the subsequent few Chuvas as well. As I say, he got a lot of flack because he was considered liberal, was considered lenient in his ruling he said that you don't need to stop the histakos, although he recommended it. It's very clear that he said that if you want my opinion, I think you should prevent people from being able to see each other. But he's talking of the halacha. You wonder what the chiyuv of the mechitza. That's what he said. Okay, now what does this have to do with us? Well, here we are talking the topic of the shiur, talking about weddings. Now, a wedding is clearly different because, as we said, the issue in the Beis HaMikdash, and the issue in a shul is because there's a pasuk that says Mikdash HaKiro, that you have to have reverence. So it's an issur. You're dealing with a Torah law that says you're not allowed to have Kalos Rosh in a shul, right? And by the way, I just want to add that this fact that Rav Moshe says very clearly applies midaraisa to a shul. And here I don't get into a lot of trouble, but it might not only refer to when people are davening in shul. In other words, let's say a lecture is being given in a shul. Okay, so then you say, well, do you have to sit the men and women behind the women behind the mechitza? So people will say, nah, they're not davening. But if the reason for the issue is because mikdash haTiro, because you can't have lightheadedness. And that has to do with the shul. It has to do with the structure of the shul. And even if, as I said before, even if you will say that, well, the shuls today are built b'tnai, that they're built on a condition that you don't have to act with the highest degree of reverence, but it's clear in all the poskim that Kalos Rosh is prohibited no matter what you say. So therefore, it could very well be that if a lecture is being held in a shul, if the room itself, the heichal of the shul, demands that people sit behind the mechitza. That has nothing to do with the davening. The Simchus Beis HaShoeva, there was no davening that took place. They didn't have a minyan gemara at first. That wasn't the issue. Right? The Simchus Beis HaShoeva was a celebration, but the need for this was because Mikdash HaKiro, because it's a rule in a holy place, in a sacred place. So therefore, just for the record, I'm not trying to start trouble, but should you ever hear somebody say in a shul where there's something taking place, a lecture or who knows what, and they say, well, they still have to have them in mind. And a lot of people say, what's wrong with you? You're out of your mind. This is a shtick that has never been heard of. That's not necessarily true, because it has to do with the room. It doesn't have to do with the davening. That's what you see from the Gemara and Sukkah. So therefore, this is something that should be kept in mind. But getting back to the issue of what about at a wedding? So a wedding is no mikdash tiro, right? Unless the wedding is being held in the chuppah is being held in the shul, which is a topic for a different shiur, whether you're allowed to do that, but it's commonly done today. Okay, so there that may be an issue. But let's say at a wedding celebration. A wedding celebration, there is no mikdash there. So as such, you'll say, so okay, we can now say goodbye to the Gemara in Sukkah, right? The Gemara in Sukkah now has no bearing because of the fact that this is, it's a whole different scenario. So the fact of the matter is that if one looks in the writing from the time of the Rishonim, there's even something that was found in the Otar HaGaonim, which I didn't want to include because it'll take too long, which indicated that from way, way back, even from the time of the Gaonim, those from the great yeshivas in Bavel, in the previous, and now it's already 2 millennia ago, right, the period after the Gemara was written, when the center of Torah was still in Bavel, there are writings that say that even at weddings, they should have the men and women separately. But what would be authoritative that we would say, this is, as I mentioned, in the Shulchan Aruch, we don't find such a halacha. That you have, we don't even find it about a shul, but you certainly don't find such a halacha about a wedding. So there is a often quoted citation from the Sefer Chassidim. The Sefer Chassidim was a book that was written by Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, who was a very holy man, very pious man at the time of the Rishonim, one of the Ashkenazic Rishonim. And he, in his Sefer, now this Sefer, we'll see, in and of itself is not halakhically binding either, but we'll see what came from what he wrote. So he wrote the following thing, okay, and I'm going to try to excerpt it he brings the pasuk. I'll start from the top, from the beginning of the quote here. That we have a pasuk which we say every day in the davening. Hod v'hodor l'fanav oz v'ched v'bimkomo. That there are times when God has not just hod v'hodor, not just splendor in His domain, but also oz v'chedva. There's also times of happiness. There are times of happiness. So that Hashem has times of joy, so to speak. So the Sefer Chassidim says, "L'kach Omer Shasimcha b'mono." At a wedding, we know that as part of the benching, we say there's an addition made to the benching with Zimun. We say Nevarech Lokenu Shasimcha b'mono v'Shacham Sholiyed in two words. Shasimcha b'mono means that happiness is found b'mono. Mono means in His domain. In the place where Hashem is, there is also simcha, meaning that when we celebrate at a wedding in this, or on here in our world, we believe that not only are we rejoicing, but Hashem is also rejoicing. And thus we say these special words, Shasimcha v'ma'ono. So he says, he proceeds to say that this is the idea that we're saying that there's times of chedva, there are times of happiness, of pleasantness that Hashem has, and He proceeds to cite the pasuk Yismachu Hashemayim Mesogel Haaretz, that the heavens will rejoice, right, and the earth will rejoice. Now we say this pasuk all the time, every day. It's even one of the songs from the old generation for the Hakafas and some Chassari, Yitzchukh Hashemayim B'Sogel HaAretz. And as many times as we say this pasuk, we may not focus on the fact that the Rosh Tevis, that the abbreviation, that the first letter of the words Yitzchukh Hashemayim B'Sogel HaAretz is Yud, and then a Hey, and then a Vav, and then a Hey, right, the Shem Hashem, right, which means that it says Rosh Tevis Hashem Arba Otios Kishiyej Giwa B'Aretz Biro Oda. All simcha b'shamayim l'fanav. That this is because when it's sogel ha'aretz, when people are celebrating properly, a meaningful celebration in this world, so we have the belief that yismachu b'shamayim, that God is also dancing, so to speak, also happy. And when you go to a wedding and everyone is dancing, so we say that God is also the simcha, yismachu b'shamayim, the sogel ha'aretz. So, says the Sefer Chassidim, he says the following thing. He says, as a result of this, if you want to include in your benching at your wedding the word Shasimcha b'mono, which is the greatest thing you could say. You know, somebody asks you, how was the wedding? How was the chasana? So what are you going to say? Well, the food was good, this was good, the hall was, who knows what kind of things you'll say. Music. But the ultimate thing you could say is that Shasimcha b'mono, that Hashem was also celebrating. This wedding was so levitic, it was such a celebration that God was also dancing. Right? Says the Sefer Chassidim, says Rav Yehuda HaChassid, that if you want to say those words, you better make sure that God was in fact dancing at this wedding. What does that mean? So he says that if the celebration took place in the proper frame of mind, with the proper attitude. He says, but there are certain situations where you can have a wedding where God is not celebrating. And he lists off, in Wokeav Adam Isha Shaina Haguna. If the wedding took place that this fellow married someone who wasn't a good thing for him to marry this woman is going to bring him down, or vice versa, the girl married a boy who's not up to the dictates of the Torah, he's not going to help her keep the mitzvahs properly. So then he says that if neither of them was in the right situation. Right? And then, if you skip a line, he says, in all of these cases, you can't say Shasimcha b'mono. He says, it's very questionable if you can make that declaration, Shasimcha b'mono, because you're claiming that God is happy. Well, who says God is happy about this? Maybe not. Maybe not. Look what's going on over here. Look who's marrying who. This is not a good situation. So he says, this is what he says, that you should not, that it's, one should consider before he said the word Shasimcha b'mono, and then he adds another situation where you should worry about whether it is proper to assume that God is celebrating. He says, O Noshim Yoshvos Bein HaNoshim Shahir Hurim Shon. He says, or if the two people getting married are both fine people, but the seating at the wedding is in such a manner that the women are sitting amongst the men, which is going to, could lead the men to have inappropriate thoughts. They're sitting with women, not obviously not talking about the women that they're married to, talking about the other people, right? So therefore, that is going to lead to improper thoughts. Says review the achosid lo yitochen levarash simcha b'mono. Then it is not appropriate to say these words. He says because aleu kiyosadem nemar lo yashavti besod nesachakim ve'elos. God says I'm not happy sitting in types of simcha like this. This does not make me happy. So says the sefer chassidim. Okay, so now the stakes have been raised. Okay, because now we're not talking about the Beis HaMikdash. Now we're not talking about a shul. Now you're talking about a wedding in a wedding hall. And Rav Yehuda HaChosid comes down and says that you should just beware that if you want to assume, which everyone should want to assume, you know, you marry off a child, such a simcha, but when you think about it, the ultimate simcha is that God is also rejoicing at this simcha. If you want to make sure that's true, he says, if you want to be certain that that's true, it's not a good idea to sit the men and the women together. So says Rav Yehuda.
Even your wife.
Huh?
Even your wife.
Well, you could sit with your wife, but the problem is that the next person is sitting with his wife too, and that's where the problem arises. You can sit with your wife if you want. Okay, so says Rav Yehuda. Now, anybody who's familiar with the Sefer Chassidim will say, all right, take it easy, calm down. The Sefer Chassidim, as its name indicates, is a book of piety, and this is not the halacha. You look through the Sefer Chassidim, you see a lot of sort of things that'll raise a person's eyebrows, right, and say, whoa, you know, all kinds of acts of piety that are described there. So you'll say that, well, this has nothing to do with us. Okay, you want to be a tzaddik, you'll be a tzaddik. But for the mainstream halacha, normative halacha, to say that this has to be, take it easy. Right? That's what a person will say. Okay, so the question is, what was the fallout from this sock of the Sefer Chassidim? So when we come more to the mainstream halachic opinions, in other words, well, let's just say for the moment that Rav Yehuda HaChosid will not be counted as the mainstream halachic opinion, but we find people who came several generations later. So if you turn over the sheet, we have the well-known Marshal, one of the great Gedolei Achronim from the earliest Achronim in the 16th century, of Shlomo Luria, that he wrote several svarim of great importance. He wrote a commentary and a footnote, so to speak, to the Shas, which is called the Chochma Shlomo. It's printed in the back of every Gemara. And also, he wrote a much longer work on Halacha called Yamshel Shlomo. And he writes there in his commentary to the Gemara in Ksuvos, he says, Gam b'sefer chassidim, on the top right here on the second side, Gam b'sefer chassidim kotzav she'en levarach shasim kumono heicha she'yoshkan anoshim b'cheder echad. Why? He says, ki hasotan mekatre, because the sotan is there at such a simcha. Ve'en simcha l'fnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and God is not happy at such a time. And he writes, quoting, making a play on the Pasuk in Eicha, he says, V'ani agever ashero oni ami, he says, I myself have witnessed in the sufferings of the Klal Yisrael, shekama kilkulim bom, he says. I myself can bear witness that things resulted from such simchas. That things that were less than desirable came about from simchas like this. And therefore, the Yamshel Shlomo quotes the Sefer Chassidim, and it's apparent if one reads the piece, he's talking l'halacha. He's saying that this is not just saying this is an act of piety. He's saying that this is the way it has to be, because the Sefer Chassidim says that this is not a good thing. This is not, Hashem is not happy about this. His son is dancing, included in all the dancing at that wedding. Unbeknownst to anybody, including the photographer, would have been a great picture to capture it, but the son is also dancing, right? You can't, right? And we don't know exactly, you know, what shtick the son is, whether maybe he's wearing some costume or disguised as a person, right? But the fact of the matter is, the son is also there dancing, and therefore, says the Yamshel Shlomo, forget it. You cannot have, you cannot, what's that?
Dressed up as elves.
All right, so whatever. Okay, so says the Yamshel Shlomo. Yes. He says, what? I'm sorry?
On the page, the second one.
Yes, yes.
He's suggesting here
non-specific.
Thank you. Right. Very good point. Okay. So, now, as is being correctly pointed out, if you see here, he says, so what do you need to prevent this? What do you need to prevent this? So he says that the problem is, he's not talking that the men and the women are dancing together or seated at the same table, in which case he'll say, well, maybe let's just sit them at separate tables. But he says, b'cheder echad, they're in the same room. They shouldn't be in the same room. So if they shouldn't be in the same room, so then this would make the case. You know, today people make weddings, you go up in New York, and a lot of the halls today, you don't have, very often the yeshivas and schools make halls as a fundraiser, they attach them, they build a new building, they make a hall. So there are numerous halls that are in Williamsburg, in Brooklyn, in New York, and you go there, and these are from Hasidic institutions, and you go there and they have a separate entrance for the men and the women. It's very annoying, right? You can't find the right place to go in. If you've ever had the wonderful experience as I have, to mistakenly walk in the wrong entrance, so then you get a Shalom Aleichem like you will never get any other time in your life. And you know, so you say to yourself, this is crazy, whether it's Shigas, whether, you know, I told them, why did they have to come here? You deal with the Chassidim, go somewhere else and have a normal wedding. But here you have, the Yom Shalom was no chassid. Yom Shalom no chassid is right. There's the Chedera. Okay, so if we stop right here, so the Williamsburg Halls is the way it has to be. Okay, however, the Yom Shel Shlomo had the Mashal had a Talmud, who was a prolific author, his name was Mordechai Yaffe, wrote many Sfarim, Sfarim that were held in very, very high regard, known as the Baal HaLavush. The Lavush is quoted, in all the poskim. Not always do they agree, you know, with what he said, but his monumental addition to the source of halachic writing, he wrote on many, many areas of halacha, and we have the Sfarim to this day. So I apologize here, it's a little bit, it looks like hieroglyphics, but if there's a good heter that comes from this, so you may want to strain yourself to read it. So he says, so the Lavush in the top left here says, towards the end of the piece, he quotes the Sefer Chassidim. I won't read it in the interest of saving time. But then he says, V'ein nizharim ashav bazeh, says the Lavush, that I know what it says in the Sefer Chassidim. But people are not careful about this in our time. Why not? So he says a fascinating thing. He says, Mishum da'achshav morgulos hanoshim harbei deina hanoshim. He said, because the world has changed. It used to be that women were not working together with men. Women didn't work. Maybe he doesn't say that specifically, but we could relate to this, right? The fact is that typically women stayed home and raised the family. It was the man who went into the world. So therefore, men and women, other than a man with his wife, didn't cross paths so commonly. Says the Lavush, but it's not like that anymore. This is written in the 1600s. The Lavush says that today women go amongst men, and therefore it's not shocking, it's not surprising for a man to see a woman who is not his wife walking around, because it's commonplace. And therefore he says an amazing thing, not amazing in its concept, but amazing in the halakhic viability of this thing, because he quotes the Gemara, it's an incredible extension that he's making, but basically he says, V'ein kan erhuri aveira. He says, he compares this to a Gemara in Brachos, which I don't want to get into, but basically, the Gemara speaks about a certain tzaddik who basically had seeing women had absolutely no bearing on him, and he said that the reason was because of the fact that, to me, I don't see anything, it doesn't mean anything to me. So the Gemara of Gittel and Achachim in the Sefer Brachos, so that typically understood to mean that because he was a very holy spiritual person, so it didn't mean anything to him. But comes the Lavush, and the Lavush says everybody could be like that. Because the fact of the matter is that you see women all the time. So if you see women all the time, it doesn't have that effect. You see a woman, a person not going to react. It's not an unusual thing to see. So therefore, he says, there's no hurry of error. There are no thoughts of impropriety. And therefore, on that basis, people are not careful about what to say for the season says. So there you have it. Okay, so now we have the counterpoint. Okay, the Lavush, who comes, sort of brings us down to earth, who says, let's get real. That's not the way the world is. People go, men and women together. Nobody goes crazy. You see people work with women. You see women all the time. It's not going to lead to any problems. Now, he does not say, it's not clear from him, and therefore what? And therefore, does that mean you don't need a machitza, but you have to sit them separately? Does that mean you don't even have to sit them separately? Sit at the same table. Right? Because today, listen, we all see everybody, men and women, work together, no problem. So it's not clear. But the question, the bigger question is, so who wins out in this? In other words, here you have the Maharshal Yom Shel Shlomo, who says that we have to concern ourselves with the Sefer Chassidim, and then you have the Lavush, who says, nah, doesn't apply anymore. So this is a big issue that has, again, a raging argument that has gone from that point on. So, for example, we have here the Bach, which is cited here on the sheet. The Bach quotes the minute of Krakow in Poland that he says that it's very interesting. He says he's not talking about a wedding, but he says apparently at weddings the men and women did not sit together. But he says, but at the second night after the wedding, what we would call a Sheva Brach, they had a celebration that was held on a much smaller scale. And at that time, when they had the Sheva Brach, when they came to benching, the minute was that you don't say Shasimcha B'mono. They only said it by the wedding. They wouldn't say it by a Sheva Brach. Right? So he couldn't understand where did they get that from. If you look in the Gemara and Ksuvos, which discusses when you say Shasimcha B'mono, it implies that you could say it, some say you could even say it the whole first year of the marriage. Why can't you? Certainly could say it during the Sheva Brach, as we do. So why didn't they say it? So says the Bach, the reason is that he thinks the reason is because of what the Sefer Chassidim said. Because a Sheva Brachas was a much smaller celebration. So he says, by the weddings, this is the way it's explained, even though he doesn't say so much, but the way it's explained, by the weddings, it was a large celebration. So in fact, they kept the men and the women totally separate. But at a Sheva Brachas, you don't have that luxury. It's not held in a hall very often. It's held in a person's private home. So what are you going to do? You put people in a different room? You can put them in a chitza? It's not possible. So therefore, the men and the women were sitting together. They didn't say Shasimcha B'mono. That's what he says. Now, you could take two things from this. You could take that on the one hand, he's still holding by what they say. He was not, apparently not accepting the Levush's psat, the Levush's leniency. On the other hand, he's telling you that at these celebrations, the men and the women sat together. So it's hard to know. So what are you sending mixed messages over here? Like what's the right thing to do? So unfortunately not on the sheet, but the Beis Shmuel, one of the commentaries in the Shulchan Aruch, says over what the Bach said, but he says, he puts it, formulates it differently. He says, Kosova Bach, this is Sin Sam Chbez in Evan Ezer, Kosova Bach, Shana Noshim and Noshim Chederechad, Ein Om Shan Simcha Mamono, De Ein Simcha Kashiyeter Harashole. He says that the Pesach Halacha, that if you have a Sheva Brachas, you should not say, in a person's home, should not say Shasimcha B'mono, because God is not dancing. Because the Yitzhara is there at that celebration, and as much as people mean well, but the Yitzhara is present, and therefore should not say it. Which would seem to imply that he's saying that is the Halacha. That's what he's telling us. In other words, the Bach, when he said it over, was just reporting on a practice that was done without necessarily, what did he mean by that? Is he trying to say that that's what you should do, or that's just telling you this is what happened? It's hard to know. So if you don't mind, I'll take right there, just because I'm running late here. So here you have the lines being drawn, and the fact of the matter is that ever since then, going forward, it's been the same issue. Ever since then, going forward, this has been the argument. Do we say it or not? And it seems from many Svarim that the tradition was that they kept the people separate, and even in separate rooms, that they would have a room where the men celebrated, a room where the women celebrated. It's brought down in one of the Svarim that in the Hungarian minhag was that the women would be there, but then before the women would bench by themselves and leave and go into a different room, and then the men would bench and say Shasimcha B'mono, because at least at that time there were no women there. So, alright, it's hard to know. But we find in the a very interesting thing, I apologize, I'm running really late here, so I just want to finish up. So we find from the 19th century, one of the Gedolei Achronim, Tzvi Hirsch Shapiro, I believe was his name, wrote a sefer on the mitzvahs called Derech Pikudecha. So he says over here, he's talking about the issue that's brought in the Pirkei Avos, is brought that al tarva sicha ma'isha, the statement of the Chazal that a person should not engage in long conversations with women in general, because it could lead to issues. So he says,